Don't spend my grandson's paycheck. He's only 2 years old. With Obama in the White House, his future's bought and sold. Stop this immoral spending spree. Stop assaulting our liberty. Let me help you comprehend. It ain't your money to spend.
Good evening and welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're going to be your host tonight for another edition of Weekly Conservative Talk. Good evening, Bill.
Hey, Tracy. I am in high dudgeon tonight.
Really?
Yeah. Man, well, there has just been so much stuff going on today that I can't even believe it.
Well, I'm in a good mood because it's 63 degrees right now.
Oh, my gosh. And you're calling in from Florida, right?
Yeah, don't I?
Yeah, worry. Right.
At least okay. San Diego.
yeah, exactly.
it's been a very nice day here. It's been right around 70, nice breeze.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to get back into winter tomorrow. It'll be back down in the 40s.
Yeah,
but it
yeah.
was a nice little break when it happened.
Yeah, so well, you know, global warming helps you out every once in a while. Yeah.
Al Gore must be on the other side of the planet right now.
Exactly.
So what's got you all chipper?
Oh, my gosh. The latest thing, and folks, if for those of you who are maybe tuning in for the first time, served, but both of us in the Air Force. Now, I went in 1960, and the deal in 1960 was... you got free medical care. Didn't matter if you were in the service.
77 when I went in.
Yep. Well, guess what, folks? Dear comrade leader Obama decides that he wants to change that.
Oh, now, we're going to save money, Bill. Come on, we're supposed to save money.
This twit, this incompetent fool, has decided that... or at least has said, here's what we're going to do unless you come up with a better plan to save $545 billion, which incidentally is maybe a little bit more than half of what he's planning to send to Gaza, Hamas, and Al-Fatah, is that third-party insurances will be billed for GI medical care. Now stop and think about that for a second, folks. I don't know how many of you read your policies, but I will guarantee you this. Every insurance policy that you have, private insurance, has an exclusion for war zone and war-related recoveries.
That's true. Absolutely.
They will not pay.
That's true.
And so consequently, if you're a GI and this goes through, you're on the hook for your own medical expenses. You were wounded in Iraq, Afghanistan, or any place else in the world, and you pay out of pocket for your medical expenses.
We support the troops.
Oh, yeah. What was it that Michelle Obama said? Oh, you've got a friend in the White House. Let me tell you what, folks. Friends like
cook.
That, I don't
it's
need any
cook.
Enemies. I'm sorry.
<It's the
laughs> Jeez.
Cook. That's the only one that's a friend of the military in that White House right now is the cook.
Yep, I suspect that. You know, it's just, this guy is a fool. I mean, he has to know, or at least somebody around him has to know, that insurance companies exclude that stuff. They have got to know that. I mean, folks.
No, look, come on. You're giving this group way too much credit. We have found every time you turn around that they are the worst examples of bumbling Keystone cops.
Oh, yeah.
They are completely without any sense whatsoever. Michelle Obama, you know what? I don't want to even get to her. You know, she's the first lady. She's fine. She can say whatever she wants. She's over there.
Yep.
She's an idiot. You know, I'm beginning to believe, I really am, I'm beginning to believe that you must prove complete and utter idiocy in order to get into an Ivy League college. Because that's the only way to explain the fact that the people that are coming out of those colleges are morons.
Yep. I agree. I mean, I cannot even believe that somebody didn't jump up and say, excuse me, sir, excuse me, community organizer in chief. You do realize, of course, that no insurance company covers those risks. Nobody jumped up and said that?
You know,
Chinesky, retired general, didn't jump up and say, wait a second, Mr. President, I'm sorry, that isn't going to work. What kind of incompetence is that?
They continue to prove over and over again that simply the act of existing, while it affords us certain rights, apparently gives them the right to be complete and utter morons.
Ah, okay. So we can go back to his definitive statement during the emergency $1 trillion bailout of, I believe I trumped that. I won.
Well, let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
Let's talk about that for a second. Because I one of the things that I wanted to bring up tonight was this general idea of consistency. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is clear that Obama has been extremely consistent since he became president.
Yes, he has.
Every single time he opens his mouth, the markets fail. Every time he says something, it's in direct contradiction to what he said on a campaign trail. And every time he promotes a policy, it is guaranteed to screw exactly the person he says it's to benefit.
Yeah.
So he's been completely consistent. I don't know why anybody has any problems with this.
Yeah.
Now,
other than if you're the screwy, right?
Well, you know, hey. Anybody that believed he wasn't going to screw everybody before he became president, you know, sorry.
Yeah.
Most
deserves
people
what
understood
you get.
That right from the very beginning.
Exactly.
Right. The economy is fundamentally strong.
Let me see now. I remember a presidential debate, one of three, where one candidate said that, and the other candidate said, you're living in la-la land. Let me see if I can recall who that might have been. Oh, perhaps that was the community organizer-in-chief that told Senator McCain, you're living in la-la land.
Well, la-la land has become effectively Washington, D.C. We should just go ahead and go out, change all the signs, and just say la-la land.
35 miles to La La Land.
As a matter of fact, the next time Obama has a press conference, which supposedly will be, is it next Tuesday while we're having our show? I dare somebody to stand up in the press room, put their fingers in their ears, and go, la, 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 la. Okay. All right, so here we are in La La Land, and the economy is fundamentally sound. Okay. Now, this is what was getting me today, and it just kind of simmered and stewed a little bit. If the economy is sound,
come on,
then we certainly don't need a second stimulus, since not one penny of the first stimulus has been spent yet.
That's true.
And the economy has gone from disaster to sound in just 6 weeks.
Yes. In fact, if you stop to think about it, if none of that $1 trillion has been spent, perhaps we could just cancel that.
Hey, I like that idea. And then Obama can say that he cut the budget by, you know, $800 trillion.
There you go.
What a way. Bill, this is brilliant. I like this idea. idea. A lot. Obama said to say he fixed the economy in 6 weeks by going from disaster to sound in 6 weeks just by talking. And
cut the budget by $1 trillion.
Over the next...
Yeah.
I think that's a winner.
I believe.
Somebody should tell him. Somebody should make some comments known to them that what we say here on this radio show, ladies and gentlemen, I will have to tell you, if you go back and listen to the archives and then go back and listen to Rush's archives, what you will hear is whatever we're talking about today, Tuesday, I can pretty much guarantee you by next week, Rush is going to be talking about it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. This happened over and over and over and over again. I think we're just visionaries, Bill.
Perhaps one of our secret listeners is Rush.
Ooh, wouldn't that
be
interesting?
Yeah.
All right. I do want to go back a little bit.
Okay.
As you may have surmised by my finishing up last week, I had to go out of town for a funeral last week.
Yes.
My brother, who was 45, died a week ago Saturday. Cause still as of yet unknown.
Oh, my goodness.
It may be one of several things. He fell off a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And he may have clipped his head going down.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe had a slow bleed.
Yep.
He had his heart high blood pressure medicine changed on the Monday before he died.
Mm.
That might have had an impact.
Yep.
And he was getting sick during the week, and that may have caused him falling off the ladder. He was taking antibiotics, and that is not always smart, depending on the heart medication you're on. They tend to interact badly with each other. So they don't know. It could be one of a bunch of things. We'll have to see. But the reason I bring this up, and it's kind of important, not just because he's my brother, and this is my show, I get to say whatever I want. However, I was at the wake on Thursday evening, and our expectation was that, 50, 60 people would show up, people that, close to the family, close to him. And the number was over 300.
Wow.
The interesting thing about it was, it was people from the neighborhood that I grew up in, that we grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody believes us when we say this. On the street that I grew up in, within one block radius of my house that I grew up in, there was 103 kids under the age of 18.
Wow.
103 kids. We didn't just have pickup softball games. We had pickup softball leagues.
Yeah.
We would have games of lemon or kick the can in which 30 kids were playing.
Wow.
That was the neighborhood. That was a time in our history, in the 60s, and early 70s even still, when, you had big families in lots of neighborhoods, and the kids were allowed to go out. It would be nothing during the summer for us to go out of the house at 9:30 in the day and not show up back at the house before 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Just
yep.
have gone all day long.
Yep.
If we came in, we'd grab a bite to eat, a soda, and run out the door and keep on going.
Yep.
It was a way of life that is gone. I certainly wouldn't allow CJ to disappear when she was 10 or 8 for 6 or 8 hours into the neighborhood without me knowing exactly where she was.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I got a chance to see people that I haven't seen in many cases for 30 years, since I left that neighborhood. Although my family has, through my brothers and sisters, has kept in touch, obviously, with a lot of people. It was rather interesting to meet people and see what has been going on in that very large, very diverse group. And you got to understand, we have some of my brother's friends became doctor, dentist. Others were tradesmen. Others are bums still today. It was still, nonetheless, it was a rather interesting range of people that it came. And I will suggest to you that we didn't talk politics almost at all. It happened on one or two minor things. But it was very much a very positive thing for my parents to be there.
Excellent.
To see all these people.
Excellent.
and it was an amazing thing. It was very, very, very good for us as a family, and it was very interesting to see how many people showed up. So, it was a, given the circumstances, it was still a good time, and it's something that I want to stress to people. I said this at the end of the show last week. You know, look at the people that you love. Say things you should be saying to them now. You may not know what's going to happen in the next hour or so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
At the same token, there are people in our lives that have gone in and gone out that it's not necessarily a bad thing to connect with on occasion. So, anyways, that's what I had to say about that. I wanted to go on to that. You know, you need to have some of those people come back into your lives on occasion just to remind you of where you came from.
Absolutely. All
right. We have two callers that are joining us. I recognize those numbers. Area code 703, caller number one. Say your name and sign in, please.
Well, howdy, everyone. This is Butch.
Hi, Butch.
Butch.
How are things?
And that means that the other caller has to be Rick.
Yep.
Rick.
I would guess that.
That would be affirmative.
That'd be affirmative.
What's up, Rick?
Good evening, gentlemen. What can I do for you? What's up? What's going on? What's new? Hey, where's my chat?
Where's your chat? What do you mean?
I went onto the old website, AmericanConservativeParty.org, and my chat's gone. I like
your
chat.
Yeah, we don't like you to chat anymore.
Okay.
No,
we're
anti-chat.
All right, I'll chat here. We'll chat here.
Yeah, you guys can chat anytime you want. You know, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I can put it back up, I guess. I wasn't aware that it was taken off.
It looks like things are going pretty well on the new party.
We're doing okay, man. We're doing okay. I want to give you a quick update, then I'm going to get off and let Rick talk about the tea parties that are coming up. But just to kind of update, we have three... two new, brand new state directors that we just sort of took on this past, over the last few days. One is in Nebraska, a guy named Tim Heller, and in Pennsylvania, a guy named Chris Nolan. That's good news. Pennsylvania is a huge state. You know, that's one we really want to get involved with because we have a Republican senator up there. Pretty much since, I don't know, the Kennedy administration has lost his mind. That's a great state, and Chris is pretty excited about getting things started there. We also Dan is back. Dan settled down in New York, and so he's willing to take on a little role there in New York as well. So that's another state directorship that we can safely say is we have someone watching the fort there and holding it down there in New York. And we're actually in conversations and trying to get some things moving in five different states, Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, Utah, and North Carolina. Some of those will come down over the next week or so with some people who are willing to take on a state leadership role. That being said, we've had people from all over the country join on the new site. I think we're up to about 30 states or so, a little shy of that, I think. You know, we actually have, 34 states, I think, with some members in them from the previous website, but there's some of those folks we just haven't heard from in a while, and so if you are, if you go to the website and you don't see your state, that's because you haven't joined yet on the new site, and you should probably join.
Yep.
So okay. On the new site, so we'll know who you are, you can be counted, and then as you guys knew from last week, we have a lot of volunteer positions that are up. So that puts if those five come down with somebody representing them over the next week or so, that'll put us at roughly 15 states with a state director. And so there are three states that we hope over the next couple weeks, we'll at least over the next month, between now and the tea parties, we'll have an actual state chapter in formation. So. Virginia is having its first meeting Friday, which will be a blast.
Oh, yeah?
So we'll let you know how that goes. And South Carolina is probably hard upon, And, you know, the most challenging one, poor Charlie, is Texas. You know, we have a lot of members in Texas, but they all happen to be very, very, very far away from our illustrious state director, Charlie Domino. So there's a lot of membership out in San Antonio, so that's getting really cool. So the goal is to get, I mean, honestly, to tell you what our goal is, we want to get 20 state chapters. Actually 10 state chapters up hopefully by the end of April, just get, you know, 10 states that have had a meeting with, you know, five or more people. That's kind of the goal there. And have 20 that are on the way, you know, that have a state director, somebody who's looking for members, somebody who's talking about their state issues, getting the policy committee together, et cetera, et cetera. There's some steps involved in doing that. Rick is making that more formal. And on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Rick, and he's going to talk about what's happening come tax day.
Oh, boy.
So take it over, Rick. I'm going to turn it over to him, and I'm going to just listen. So you guys have a good night.
Thanks, all Butch. Right.
Thanks, Butch.
Thanks, Butch. Well, following up with one thing that he just said, we're having our first South Carolina chapter meeting next Thursday.
Excellent.
I've got at least five people that are going to be in attendance and two more that I think will be there.
Cool.
It didn't give me 100%, but, you know, we're getting there, you know. So, I mean, this is going to be five people sitting down at a table and actually talking about state policy and where we want to go state party. So that's a great thing, you know, coming up with that. And the other thing that we're going to talk about is coverage on tea parties. Most of you know that the next round of tea parties is scheduled to begin on tax day, April the 15th. Just for my area, within easy driving distance between the 15th and the 17th of April, there are going to be about 7 tea parties. And I'm going to try to cover all 7 of them in those 3 days. Might not live through it, but I'm going to give it the old college try and try to do some nice recruiting. The local one here in Greenville, South Carolina, will be kind of easy. But I've got one guy who's promised me he'll drive down to Charleston and do some coverage, and I'm going to the one at the state capitol on the 15th. And then, of course, the rest of what we got going on is Atlanta and Charlotte and Asheville, North Carolina. So I just think that if you can have the opportunity to go to one of these things, it's a great experience. You know, meet a lot of good people who are just fed up. And if you take some literature and pass it out, you might actually get some people back. 2 of the 7 that I'm counting on my meeting, I've recruited directly from the last Tea Party. So it does work. And that was with no literature or nothing. That's just me talking to them, saying, hey, how are you? You know, what do you got going on? Are you, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's going on with your Republican Party here? Oh, I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's interesting. Let me tell you about some other conservatives in your area.
Mm-hmm.
Leave that opening, and hey, you know, it's off to the races. But I think that, you know, most of these are being put on by the Republican Party, but they're being put on by factions of the Republican Party that are more towards the conservative thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're great opportunities for us to network. Even if you can't recruit anybody out of there, you can meet some people who can help you out later in whatever you're doing with the party, and it's great in that way. So, once again, I will encourage everybody to attend their next tea party and see what goes on.
We've got a couple scheduled here in Wisconsin, one here in Madison that I'm hoping to be able to attend to. As it stands right now, I'll be able to be there. And it is being hosted by our local conservative talk show host. So it should be rather interesting. Also on the 18th at the state capitol of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, I did want to make some comments about the Tea Parties because initially I was not enamored with the general idea. And it's not a situation of not thought of here, so it's not my idea, so it's not a good idea. But I was concerned that the general people have done this. The idea of taxation without representation has been turned and saying representation without taxation. Now, we've had many conversations in the past about the general idea that everybody should have some skin in the game. Everybody should have some taxes taken out so that they have some kind of, well, skin in the game. They've got something to say, I'm part of this system.
Yes.
I'm not necessarily a big fan of that.
I am.
I understand.
No, I am too.
I understand that. And I think we can debate and discuss it, and it's not necessarily a big deal about it. The idea of the Tea Parties is fundamentally to say government can't be this big.
Yes.
We can't spend all this money. We're killing ourselves. I think it falls short of what we need to do. But that said, that's where my position was up and through most of last week. And then I started thinking about the general idea that for the most part, this is a grassroots effort on a conservative topic, and I should be just thrilled to pieces about.
Absolutely.
Duh. So, I'm thrilled to pieces that we have a whole lot of conservatives actually getting up off their butts and going to a place and saying, we're not going to take it anymore.
You know, and that's really interesting because it points out the hypocrisy of the corporate media. Do you know that the Los Angeles Times, no friend of conservatives there, refused to cover the Fullerton tax party, Tea Party, if you will, that had, by various estimates, anywhere from 7,000 to 15,000 people there. Refused to cover it. Gave a long diatribe about why they wouldn't cover something like that. And yet, yesterday's LA Times covered a meeting by Answer. Answer is a very left-wing organization, and that meeting hasn't even happened yet. So they were just giving them some advance publicity.
Well,
and that's just great, you know? I mean, it all goes back to what Nancy Pelosi said today. You know, that she wanted to go ahead and try to make provisions to save the media in San Francisco.
Oh, yes.
Before they have problems, before they start closing down newspapers, she wanted to make provisions, make sure that they didn't have to do that.
Yep.
Because, you know, they're the voice of her.
Exactly.
With her private Air Force full of taxis.
Yeah,
and,
really.
Everything else that she has going on, you know, and I mean, the media has become so skewed towards anti-conservatism.
Yep.
That I mean, my local paper is not bad. They're pretty good about having fair coverage, but we're a heavily, heavily Republican state. But if you go to the state newspaper, which is that actually the name of the paper is the State, which is based in our capital here in Columbia, I mean, even they will just take that little dive into the liberal masses there, and they do it quite frequently. You know, they take every chance that they can to take pot shots at Mark Sanford, and everything, you know, this Republican representative is got this bill up here, and this is why it's bad. So, you know, as that being said, I have very little faith in the media system in this country anymore anyway.
Well, I think newspapers need to go exactly the same general direction as has happened in Seattle.
Right.
I think it's good business sense that when you're not making money, you should close the doors. And
they're going to internet only, right?
You know, internet only news organizations have a tendency to find out that they're competing with me, Tracy.
Right.
And depending on who's reading, the competition is stiff.
Yep.
I mean, I read right now, I have about 40 blogs that I read every day.
Wow.
And I read them through my reader, RSS reader, and I would suggest to you that almost all the news that becomes pertinent as the day progresses appears on one or more of those blogs during the course of the day.
Yep.
Yep.
So I've got a very good mix. There's half a dozen political sites. There's about 10 or so that are economic sites.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest are a mash of science fiction and general news and topics from different areas of the country. I am not surprised by any part of the newscast at this point. Even Fox News at 6 o'clock, I don't hear anything in that newscast that I haven't read already. So that's what the newspapers are facing, is that I'm getting the news before even the cable news channel is getting the news.
That's right.
Now, generally speaking, I'm getting it because the cable news channels are breaking the news, and I'm getting it almost right away. So their standard newscasts are after the fact. But even beyond that, I'm getting news that isn't being covered by mainstream press at all.
Yes.
You know, I'm listening about the Tea Parties. I saw the Cincinnati Tea Party and some of the discussions about it and how the size of it and how little news coverage was being done on it. So these are things that are impacting me, and those are the things that are impacting these newspapers. Nancy Pelosi can try and save the California press all day long. Eventually, somebody's going to get pissed about the idea that, you know, California got saved and New York didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or Florida didn't, or Texas didn't, or Seattle didn't. So they can't save them all. And the ones that they will save will be so blatantly prejudicial. Now they're blatantly biased, but I mean it's going to be blatantly prejudicial once they start getting government money, that any objectivity that can even be pretended will be gone.
For a lot of us, that objectivity is already gone.
Yeah, I welcome the competition. Seattle,
sure.
PI, come on, bring it on.
You
betcha.
I'll
put my blog up against you any day of the week.
That's right. I mean, they may excel in local Seattle stuff. I mean, they probably ought to. You are not in Seattle. They are.
Don't care about Seattle. Sorry, Seattle.
I know
that doesn't sound right, but frankly, no, you guys are all wet.
Yes, they are.
Yes,
they are.
All right. Rick, what else you got? Anything interesting? Not that what you haven't said has been interesting. I think it's cool, but what else have we got? Oh, Rick. Did I lose Rick?
Did we lose Rick?
Rick! Are you there, Rick?
Well, tell you what. While we're waiting for Rick, can we talk about AIG a little bit?
Les, please feel free to talk about AIG. Fire away. We're going to disagree on this. I can tell.
Okay. For those of you who do not know, AIG has gotten about, somewhere north of about $170 billion to bail it out. Now, if you watch the corporate media and CNN and MSNBC and ABC, NBC, CBS, what you've heard is, oh, my God, all of these executives got $170 million in bonuses. And that is outrageous, I grant you. I don't know. When I was in the banking industry, my bonuses were based on actual growth, not on negative numbers. But let me suggest to you that the $170 million that AIG employees, they aren't all executives, got is a drop in the bucket, because you have $170 billion going into AIG that should have been a bankrupt company. And our dear comrade leader is shocked, I tell you, that they use those funds to pay executive compensation that they were legally obligated to do under contract. Christopher Dodd, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, the usual suspects have said, well, we'll take care of that. We'll simply tax that at 100%. Two things there. One, the $170 billion, most of that money went to foreign banks, folks. That didn't stay in AIG's coffers. That went to USB and various other banks not headquartered in the United States of America. The second thing about that is, stop and think. If Congress can tax somebody's income at 100%, where does that leave you? When they're looking for dollars, where does that leave your paycheck? You're going to be able to make your mortgage when they tax you at 85%? I don't think so. I couldn't. Fortunately, I don't have a mortgage. But if I did have one, I can tell you right now, if they take 85% of my income, I'm dead. I'm gone. I'm bankrupt. I'll be going to see Tracy.
Come on down.
You betcha.
We've got bankruptcies for sale. Come on down.
You betcha. Hey, can I get a twofer?
Twofer.
You betcha.
Going on. We got 13s. We got 7s. We can do a few 11s over here. Come on, everybody, come on down. Down. We'll have a big sale.
Hey, there
you
go.
We've got horses. We've got cows. We've got Pelosi.
But folks, the two big issues are most of those dollars went overseas, not even connected to a U.S.-based bank, investment house, whatever. And the second is that tax issue. If they can take that money, if they can legally do that, the whole social compact has been broken, destroyed, put on the ash heap.
This is where I suggested that we need to get consistent. Us conservatives need to get consistent, because
yes, we do.
There are certain principles at play here that we need to be applying.
Yes.
So let's assume for a second that we have bailed out AIG.
Yep.
In complete contravention of any conservative principle, and probably in contravention of the Constitution, but now that it's done, we need to make sure that the government gets its pretty penny for what its investment is in. One, there are two sides to AIG.
Yes, there are.
There is the insurance side, and there is the trading side.
Yep.
We don't know how many of those employees and executives are on the trading side and are on the insurance side. Now, in a company like AIG and giving Hank Greenberg's reputation, I can suggest to you that most of those people on the insurance side have pretty piss-poor salaries and pretty great compensation in the way of bonuses for production. I would suggest to you that a majority of those, and I'm not saying all of them, people that receive bonuses were probably on the insurance side keeping AIG afloat by making sure that new business walked in the door. As you suggested, contractually do benefit bonuses for business that they have brought in. I oppose this screaming for the bonuses to be clawed back. I oppose it from the conservative side simply because you are stepping into a private organization, and I don't care the fact that government owns 80% of its stock at this particular point in time. It's still a private organization until the government says it owns it and kicks out the board, puts in new officers, and says, you will now, you know, listen to how Congress tells you to run their business. That is a private business. Congress has no business, and neither does the AG in New York, have any business sticking their nose into the bonuses that have been paid out to employees based on contracts that this government saw fit to leave in place by not allowing AIG to go bankrupt.
Yep.
So as far as I'm concerned, conservatives, AIG did not go bankrupt. Therefore, those contracts are valid. Stay the hell out of the bonuses. Those people earn those bonuses per their contracts. Now, while you may object to the general idea of Congress taxing their income 100%, I'm certain you're also absolutely convinced that Congress does not have any right to enter into a contract between an employer and employee and say, we don't like that contract.
Yep.
No matter what stock they own.
Exactly.
Now, so, keep your mitts out of those bonuses. AIG New York, get the hell out of there. And frankly, if you want to own AIG and control how it runs, fine, nationalize it or allow it to go bankrupt and take over the business yourself. But otherwise, I have zero problem with those bonuses. They can be paid out under contract. We need to stay out of it.
Absolutely.
So, I have
absolutely
no problem with bonuses. None.
Well,
zero.
And the thing that is really galling me is that Chris Dodd is the one who inserted the language in there that specifically authorized that. Chris Dodd is one of the loudest mouths out there in corporate media saying, oh my God, we had no idea that they could do that, by God, and by, we're going to do something about that. We're going to just claw all that money back. What,
you know,
a hypocrite.
You know, Skullcap Dodd, you know, can go...
Yes.
Like a boat as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
Look, that's my particular position on AIG. The bailout, yes, you are perfectly correct. The vast majority of that money went towards other banks, including Chase and USB, among others.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason AIG was in trouble was because of what they owed to counterparties to their trades.
Yes.
And that was, as far as I was concerned, knowing what was happening at the time when they were talking about $20 billion and then $40 billion and then $85 billion,
mm-hmm.
It was clearly losses on trades that had to be covered into capital and covered clearly on, you know, contracts that they owed money to elsewhere. You know, they either declared bankruptcy or paid them off.
Yes.
So I expected that money to have gone towards, you know, third parties, including a vast majority of them, out of this country.
Absolutely.
Because that's why AIG needed it. So,
but Tracy, my point is this. You and I are not neophytes in terms of economics, but nevertheless, neither one of us has got a Harvard doctorate in economics either. If we see that...
University of Illinois at Chicago... Bachelor's of Economics.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, and let me tell you, as far as I'm concerned, that trumps the Harvard PhD in economics.
Well,
but
we have in running in Washington right now, it certainly trumps just about anybody, even from Econ 101.
Exactly. But and that is my point. If you and I know that, if we can clearly see that, why in the world can't this administration see that? Why in the world cannot these all-wise elected creatures see that with their staff who give them, I assume, straight talk? Why is it that we see that, we draw that connection immediately, and they fumble and bumble and dick around and put us in an even worse mess? How does that happen?
Okay. I think I've said this before. I'm going to take 3 minutes and see if I can do this.
Okay.
When you begin to learn general economics, one of the first things that you're taught is that the system of economics is very interrelated. One variable taking its cue from many other variables.
Yes.
So much so that it is almost impossible to model anyway accurately any portion of our economy simply because it's so complicated.
That's true.
So economists have taken upon themselves the brilliant idea that what we're going to do is we're going to create this very complicated economic model, and we're going to change one variable and see what the result is. Now, from a purely academic point of view, the results are rather interesting, and it does lead to some pretty interesting insights. The reality, of course, is very different. You cannot change one variable in the economic system of our country or the world and hope that anything will stay the same.
Exactly.
But the mindset is there. It is a mindset that when you tax people, of course that means you're going to get more revenues. It is this idea that we can change one variable and the result is going to be reality.
Mm-hmm.
It is not.
Nope.
It is clear, very, very clear, that Barack Obama cannot take into consideration more than one variable at a time.
Yep.
He has zero capacity to take in the big picture and see how many different variables interact with each other. Beyond his scope, it is simply not in his ability to do so. And
I agree.
Every single policy that comes out of his mouth continues to reinforce that opinion in me that he is way in over his head.
Yep.
But
I agree.
You would expect somebody like Geithner or Bernanke would absolutely know better.
You would expect that.
Unfortunately, they are prime examples of academic economic theory. Change one variable, this is the result.
Mm-hmm.
Every
and that's
time
true.
Something comes up, we see it over and over again. One action by itself, I've seen Obama do things, his policies, that by themselves make sense. They really do. They, you know, hey, yeah, I get it. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
when you see the consequences of that act, look at all the things that start falling into place. He doesn't see that.
No, he doesn't.
He only sees change variable, net result.
Yep.
Not the dominoes spreading out and falling in ever-widening fans that, you know, and this idea that he can govern that way should be, it's clear this man has nobody that's telling him no.
That's true. Absolutely true.
There is no voice, apparently, in this current administration that is being allowed to speak anything ill of anything that's being said or done. Anyways, I see it. I mean, think about it, look at it, watch them do it. You can see it time after time after time again. It's at all levels of this administration. It's in all areas of this administration. It is individual, isolated acts that by themselves may make some sense, but taking into consideration of a global economy, a global war on terror, a global set of circumstances with people, they're beyond naivete.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing about that is, I don't even think that they believe themselves what they say. And here's the reason why I don't think that they believe the doom and gloom that they put out. And that is this. In the Treasury Department, Dear Comrade Leader has 18 positions that he has to nominate that have to go before Congress and be approved. To date, with all of this crisis, with the economy being job number one, he has nominated one person. He has 17 more to go, and they aren't even floating names. I don't believe that they believe that there is any kind of a difficulty. They certainly aren't acting like it. If the economy is in crisis, and if the Treasury is the designated organization of this government that is to deal with that, then don't you think that you would staff that organization with your appointees, that you would nominate them? I would,
yeah,
if that was my really prime concern.
Yeah, but I can only do one thing at a time.
Yes.
Mr. Obama can only do one thing at a time. I don't know what that one thing is he worked on today. Maybe he started thinking about what his speech was going to be at the press conference next week.
Perhaps.
And that's what he's working on. But apparently, you know, very little of what he does would suggest that he's spending lots of time thinking about it. I can imagine him walking around the White House, the West Wing, like a bumper ball in a pinball machine. Bounce, 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 bing, bounce, 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 bing. You know, new policy comes out. You know, because it is clear that this administration cannot deal with more than one task at a time.
Yes.
And I don't know what that task was today. I spent most of the day working feverishly.
Yes, I bet you did.
I did not read my blogs. I did not read my reader. I did not have my Spam and Eggs and,
yep,
you know, just kept my nose to the grindstone.
Mm-hmm.
The economy should be job one for him, and I don't think he has a clue on what to do with it.
And, you know, that may be why he's avoiding it, because deep down he knows he doesn't have a clue. And
well,
that
it's
he
clear
knows.
That Geithner doesn't have a clue.
That's true, nor Bernanke.
Right. Two,
either
two
one of them.
Two numbers that I read in the last 36 hours that I wanted to share with everybody.
Okay.
Both of them should scare the bejesus out of people. The first one is that 10% of all the MasterCards that are out there today,
mm-hmm,
are in default.
Oh, Lord.
1 out of 10 MasterCards are currently in default.
Oh, boy.
That means if you go walking through the mall, 1 out of every 10 people you see is actually overspending.
Oh, boy.
In trouble financially.
Folks, listen to this, because I will tell you with 35 years of banking experience, that is a very, very scary statistic.
I'm going to scare you even more.
Oh, boy.
It is estimated, based on the current expectation for housing prices over the next year, that by the end of 2009, one half of all homeowners with a mortgage will be underwater.
Whoa. Well, so much for the 9 million people that Obama's going to help, huh?
One half of all the people with a mortgage will be underwater. I found that number to be, first of all, for my business, it's going to be great.
Yes, it is.
But that's kind of like saying, hi, I'm a doctor in Lower Manhattan, and I saw a plane go into a building. My business is about to get great.
Uh-huh.
You know, folks,
yep.
This is going to be bad. Really, really, really bad. 50%, because generally speaking, there's a lot of people over that 50% that are just going to go, why bother?
Exactly.
Especially if they're facing adjustable rate mortgages. And as we, you and I, Bill, and many
mm-hmm.
other people expect,
mm-hmm.
deflation will continue throughout most of this year. And when it stops, everyone will be very happy for about 6 months.
Yeah. Yep.
And people are going to realize what we have wrought upon ourselves. All right. 2 minutes are remaining, give or take, something like that. Bill, you had one other thing you wanted to talk about tonight. So
I did, and this will actually be fairly brief. I just want to remind folks. Does anybody recall about 4 years or so ago, the term nuclear option? And that had to do with the fact that the Democrats were holding up all of President Bush's judicial nominees, would not allow them to come to a vote. And they did that via the filibuster in the Senate. So essentially it takes 60 votes to clear a nominee just to get them considered and have an up or down vote on it. Well, guess what? The Obama administration is contemplating a nuclear option, not in terms of presidential appointments. They are proposing that in terms of legislation.
Ooh, cool!
And
let's have the party in power just be able to do whatever it damn well pleases.
Absolutely. So what they're saying is, you know, folks, we can do a reconciliation bill that, by the rules, only needs a 50% vote. So why don't we just do all of that legislation as a reconciliation bill?
Why? I have this question. Why don't we just have the Republicans sit down in Congress and twiddle their thumbs? It seems like there's no reason not to allow the government, the Democrats, to just simply own their whatever they want to do. Well, we'll talk about it again next week. Butch, Rick, thanks for joining us tonight. Bill, I know you're still hearing me. Thanks for joining tonight. We will have updates on how the party is going and maybe with some discussion about some Tea Party planning for us. In the meantime, come visit our new website, the American Conservatives .org.
Org.
Thank you.
My phone died.
Y'all have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. And happy shout-out to conservative talk folks there. Thanks for tuning in.
You missed it, Bill. Sorry, I tried to hang you on there for a bit.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well. Oh, man, I hate that when my phone dies like that.
Jeez. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I heard it beeping, and so I changed phones, and apparently that other one wasn't very charged up either. So, oh, well, that happens.
Yep.
So, anyway, I thought it was a good show.
Yeah, I liked it. I had a
yeah.
good time.
Good. Okay. Cool.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Bill.
Bye.